Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
When you got bumped for Bill Gates, man.
I got bumped for Bill. I swear to God, I got bumped for Bill Gates. You know, and like that was a tough phone call.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
Everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Barrett Scher.
Hello.
And today we have a very special guest. It's director Joshua Zeman, who has made a documentary called The Loneliest Whale, The Search for 52. It comes out in theaters July 9th and digital on July 16th. Joshua, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely. How long have you been working on this documentary?
Yes. Thank you. First question I had.
Damn it. 10 years.
10 years.
Wow.
I actually thought it was a little bit shorter than that. But even that was long, still seemed like a long time to me. I think the earliest year I hear in this is 2015 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what started you in on this journey?
I'd broken up with a girl. And I had heard the story of the accident. Everybody says the same thing. And I interviewed people, and I was like, and when are you going to tell me about the breakup?
Yeah.
And so I had, like, you know, like, heard the story really quickly, and I was like, oh, my God, that story, it's fucking killer. You know, it's horrible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But what was interesting to me is I started to tell other people about that story. And I read it online and did a little bit more digging. And I'm a storyteller. So mm-hmm. I spent a lot of my time kind of like pitching people stories, you know, like, hey, did you hear the story? What do you think? You know, and I've never had a reaction to telling people a story about this one whale that scientists have heard that swims through the ocean calling out and theoretically never receives a response. And so he swims through trying as desperately as he can to make contact. And people, when I would tell them this story, they would freak out. You know, they would be like, oh my God, I have goosebumps. Or like, people would literally start crying. You know, they would. And it was like, as a filmmaker, that was super interesting to me because I wanted to know what was it about this story that created such an intense reaction from people. Mm-hmm. And that kind of started the journey, you know. And you're like, okay, well, you know, obviously, this is our mirror cells. You know, this is man's existential crisis, right? Yeah. Nobody wants to die alone. That is our biggest fear in life, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, but there's something more here, you know? And it's like, I think it's because it's a whale. And, you know, because we hear Lonesome George, the turtle, and there's all these other, like, lonesome things out there. But, like, the idea that it was a whale, and whales are so big that they kind of humble us. They're also like kind of human-like, but almost even more spiritual. And I think it's the fact that like you've got this one creature swimming through this vast ocean. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, so it was like all these like trying to like find out what it was, you know, like what was it? And that kind of led to this science, like look at whales, you know, and that's when I started to learn about noise in the ocean, sound in the ocean. Mm. Noise is a negative thing, sound is a positive. I found that out.
There's both, yeah.
Sound in the ocean, you know, and I was like, oh, this is so cool, you know, how it travels totally differently than it does on air, how there's a channel that's like 1,000 feet deep, and because of the salinity and the pressure, when low frequency sound goes in there, travels 13,000 miles across the ocean. It's like mind blowing. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is, you know, this, what was once an emotional journey is now turned into like a totally cool science journey. And then it's like, and you're also like kind of getting a little Ahab with it.
Yeah, for sure.
The story takes all these different twists and turns, because you do have that kind of spiritual existential sort of bent to it. But then you have that hardcore science of the sono buoys or whatever. And you know how that breaks down. And then you've got a sea adventure plugged into the middle of this too.
Totally.
It really does, you know, kind of expand. You go into it saying, all right, that whale's lonely. Boy, that's something. But there's so much more to this, this story that I very much appreciated the way that you kind of fleshed out this whole thing. And it almost makes, you know, the sea journey, which I really want to ask you about later on.
Sure.
The sea journey is kind of the climax of the entirety of the film. And it makes it very, very exciting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was like, okay, you know, this all stuff is cool, but like, let's make an action movie. can we make this thing like totally cool and totally action? And it's like, we can. Like these guys are using like outdated, you know, it's like, first it was like, okay, well, it's a heist film. Like, who's the crew? And we've got the best guy here for this. And, you know, that guy, John Colomakidis, the guy with the white beard, like, that dude is like the premier scientist in terms of going out on these like ribbed hull inflatables and tagging whales, you know, and the other.
He seems like Indiana Jones. Like,
It was so funny because whenever I would like talk to people, they'd be like, "Well, you want John Colomakidis?" And I was like, "Why?" And they're like, "Just see him and meet him, and then
he's perfect." Yeah, he's perfect in every way.
I was like, so how much time do you know? Like, I would be going out with him in the middle of the ocean and just hanging out with him for hours. I was like, how much time do you spend out here? And he's like, 200. You know, 275, 285 in terms of days out on the ocean. I was like, that is
wow. Man.
How long have you been doing this? And he's like, 25 years. And so this is a guy who spends more time out there than on land. He's like, he is the best. And I was like, okay, that's cool. And so it was the heist film of like getting the best crew together. And we really did get some of the best scientists in the world. I was so excited. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's like, and then this is cool. You're using technology like old sono buoys that the Navy used to hunt submarines, and you're repurposing them to like find whales. Like, it was really, it became this like really cool thing. And what was interesting about it is the scientists were like, you know, usually when we do these like Nat Geo expeditions, this, it's fairly well kind of not thought out, but it's well like sussed out. Like, they would have done this 8,000 times beforehand, so that when they get out there, the expedition is done. And of course, they were doing good science, but they would have never had one of the themes be like, can we find this whale? Because it's so ridiculous to be able to think that you could. But they're like, because this is so like indie, you know, because you've gotten this Kickstarter money and there's no like huge organization coming down, like, we could kind of just go out, you know, kind of, you know, free will it up and see what happens. Yeah. You know? And they were really, I think that allowed them to like get really creative and actually lay the groundwork for some really cool science and like some like Mission Impossible stuff that they would never have been able to do anywhere else.
That's terrific. What was the, I'm sorry, Chris, I'm so curious about this journey. What was that week long out at sea like? Because it seemed like there was a lot of people on that boat. And is this the first time that you've been out in the open sea? I mean, you guys were way out there in the Pacific, right?
Yeah, I was, you know, I had been earlier, the film went through many iterations, as I was saying, like before we like deciding to try and kickstart a expedition to go out and find one whale is not the first prescribed method of action. You know, first you would go out and you'd be like, hey, is there any incredibly rich people out there who want to fund this expedition? You know, and we actually met a few of them and they're like, okay, I'll write you a $2 million check. And then right at the last moment, something falls through, or we were going to have Ray Dalio's boat, you know, and we were going to go out and it's going to be like sleep like 100 and like everything was going to be done. And he's like, oh, I just got a call from Bill and Melinda Gates. Seriously. And we're now going to go on vacation down here, you know?
Oh.
So like,
when
you got bumped for Bill Gates, man.
I got bumped for Bill. I swear to God, I got bumped for Bill Gates. You know, and like that was a tough phone call.
Did you, are you fucking kidding me? Like, you took a lot of this stuff with a grain of salt, though, right? You didn't, like, when someone said, "I promise you my boat," you weren't like, "We got the boat," or were you like that, actually?
No, I was like, called up everybody in the world. I was like, "We got the boat."
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I'm so cynical. That's the problem with me, is like, if somebody was like, "I can give you my boat, it's way too good to be true." And I'd be like,
They got two other boats.
Yeah.
I thought it was fine. They got two other boats.
Just give me one of them.
That's why I was like, "What? Do you need this one that you've already given us? Like, why do you need that one?" And they're like, and the answer is, because that is in that side of the world.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I
was like, okay,
that's good.
There you go.
All
right.
They were like, it would cost us like $200,000 just to bring the other boat from the other side of the world for that trip. I was like, okay, that is a good excuse. Like, so I know you're not just jerking me around. But, you know, yeah, and with a film, you got to get the crew together. So you got to call everybody and be like, "We got the boat. It's Ray Dalio's boat. It's going to be amazing," you know, and like some plan for like this. And then I would call them back and be like, "Okay, we didn't get the boat," you know, and that happened like four or five times with like lots of money. So the Kickstarter thing, as cool as it is, was not the first, you know, you typically only want to go to one person, not
right,
not 3,800 people. But, you know, it actually, at the end of the day, again, made for some kind of cool science. But the answer to your question, when I got to the boat, because I had been seeing pictures of these huge, beautiful boats with like helicopters and stuff, I'm like, I was like, "That can't be the boat. That's a diamond.
Leroy Scheider."
Yeah. I was like, "That's a dive boat. Like, I don't even know that fits 22 people." And they're like, "It fits exactly 22 people."
You had 22?
Yeah.
So, wait a minute.
But 22 people, but not include, like, they don't include camera equipment and stuff like that, right?
It's like bunk, person sleep, box at feet.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird what goes through your mind when you're watching an amazing documentary like this. Is like, how do they fit all that on the cameras on the boats there? You know,
it's totally true. And so, and it was so indie. Like, I remember, like, the scientists would ask, they're like, "Go grab that thing and try and attach it to this pole really quick." And I'd be like, "Okay," you know, and I grab them and I'd be like, "See if you can you hold this, you know, focus this for me?" And they're like, "What's focus?" I was like, "Just keep this thing," you know, like they were just, it was so ragtag, you know? So there were 22 of us and I'm like, 22 people are going to sleep in this one room, you know, on this boat, like, you know, and it worked, but boy, 22 people on one shower, 7 days.
I can tell you right now, I couldn't have done that. There's no way I could have done it. So I bow down to you, sir.
No, they're committed. These guys are committed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, scientists, that's what they do, by the way. Sometimes these scientists, like, you know, it's like being in the jungles of Borneo where you just like get eat by mosquitoes for like 10 days. And this is kind of the same thing. And you got to hand it to them that they go on these excursions, but some of them don't do it that often. So they're like really dumb.
Well, what you capture on the camera is excitement. Like, it seems like, you know, obviously John was, you know, because he's out there all the time. But your other scientists looked like they were kids in a candy store.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they spent all year waiting for that 1 week to go out and like finally be able to do it. And you could tell, like, you could see it on their faces. Like, they were like, "Oh, it's a whale." You know, it's like, "Oh, you're the best subject ever."
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, "Hands off my rewards." Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know, getting back to why people are drawn to the story and everything, you know, it's a whale that has a frequency of 52 hertz when he calls out. there's this discussion of, you know, is he the only one out there? Is he able to communicate to anybody? There's a whole section of this movie where, yeah, I mean, this is where the tearjerker part of this movie is about a third of the way in or so. Yeah. Because everybody is giving their interpretations and every one of them are given equal weight. The one guy is like, that's a guy who's calling out for his mama. And you're sitting there like, this whale's like at least 30 years old, if not, not older. And he's been making this call for 30 years. I mean, you know, it's almost like a horror movie in a way, because it's what you don't know that gets you.
Yeah.
But you may have sort of touched on this on during all of this, but was this documentary close to not being made several times?
Yeah.
It was quick.
Yeah.
It was touch and go there for about 10 years.
I would imagine so. But you were, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it shows your dedication, right? Because 10 years where you don't know if it's even going to be made or not. I mean, how did you stay sane during that whole time?
Well, just look at the story of Ahab.
There you go.
You know, it was like by the end, he's crazy as a loon, but he's like, we're going to find this whale. And it was kind of the same thing, you know? And like, that wasn't like, hey, let's follow this theme. Like, that was just there. Mm-hmm. You know, and when it's certain, there's another guy who's like David Rothenberg, the guy who plays whale. He's like, you know, it's a crazy thing to like go out and search for one whale. You know how crazy this is, right? And I'm on the other side, like, yeah, I got it, okay, buddy. All right, let's just let's keep doing the interview. But like, he knew, and they would like goose each other. You know, people would goose me because they knew how crazy it was. You know, I gotta say, I don't know if I said it here, but you know, this story made me a better person, you know, talking with people about whales, about communication, about loneliness, about empathetic things made me a better person, you know, a little less self-absorbed, a little less like career self-absorbed, like, you know, on a crazy life mission. And it helped me, you know, step back and listen. You know, which my girlfriend really appreciated, you know, and so that being said, also, like, you know, 3,800 people helped give $400,000 to go out on an expedition, find a whale, you know, and, you know, there was a time I thought this whale was dead and I was going to have to give all this money back to people. And I was so upset. But then, like, I had a call, like, not only is he alive, but like, he's in Santa Barbara. Sweet. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Right?
Like the best place in the world.
You can't write something like this. Right. The fact that the film follows that progress, you're like, no, this is too unbelievable. But this is reality. It's amazing.
So that's part of what probably kept you going, though. You always had this dangling carrot, right? Yeah. Like, it was like, it's there. I know it's there. It's got to be there. I've heard news, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you just with the right technology, we live in the time that we can do this, you know? So anyway, sorry.
But then you start to get really crazy. And it's like, if you believe enough, it'll be there. Well,
you've got a vision board with a whale on it.
You play these games with yourself to, like, you know, to like trick yourself into believing so that you can, like, because also, like, you know, film, sometimes you need a leader, or you need like people take over in terms of their passion, because somebody will inevitably be like, I'm emotionally spent, you know, and then somebody will come in and like be the leader. So like, you have to like trick yourself to like being able to remain positive, or else it's all going to fall apart, you know?
Yeah. What was sort of your bare minimum goal once you started shooting, and everything? What did you like, you know, you were shooting, you knew you were going to have a movie by the end of it, I guess, at this point, once you start maybe not.
That's a good question, because the scientists are like, okay, you do understand the chances of us actually finding this whale are incredibly slim. And I was like, yes, I got that.
Everybody's giving you the null hypothesis, right?
It's just like,
even when we were like leaving on the dock, you know, they're like, okay, I just want to manage your expectations.
Yeah.
Probably will not find this whale. I was like, I know that. But we could, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, yes, we could. I was like, great. That's all you need to think in your mind. It could happen. And so I didn't, you know, we thought, okay, look, we'll get an expedition. It'll be cool. We'll do some good science. You know, I don't know how we're going to end it. We'll figure out when we get there. You know, as they say, save it. We'll fix it in post.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, and but, you know, if nothing else, we'll try and do this like a Ahabian search that doesn't quite work out, much like Ahab. And then at the end of the day, you know, you're going to try and do the age old like, but the gold was in the journey, you know.
Yeah. You could just do a CGI whale at the very end, you know.
True.
He very just
true.
Rises up out of the water and just smacks the gold out. Just wanted to make
this is not the whale, but it,
right. This is what we what think it looks like. Like.
What it could look like.
Like early unsolved mysteries are like, this is a recreation.
Yeah. Absolutely. I get the idea that you like this is one of those type of projects where I imagine you like late at night, 2 o'clock, calling up Leonardo DiCaprio or calling up Adrian Grenier and going, I don't know if I can find this whale, guys. What do you want me to do? Can you talk me off the ledge here for a second? You know, like how important were those guys, by the way? There's a million producers, obviously.
Yeah,
but the ones that people really know are these guys.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for those two guys, you know, we would not be here. You know, Adrian, Ocean Stewardship, and he took he was like, I would like to use this lonely whale metaphor for this huge camp, you know, for this, not foundation, but or an organization that he started. And he's done amazing work because he was very smart. He's like, that's the metaphor. That's the metaphor that's going to make people care about the ocean. And I was like, we need to use that. And I was like, yep, that's the whole point. I cared. I wasn't really an ocean person before I started this. You know,
really?
No, I wasn't. I mean, sure, I had been on boats and want to be a marine biologist when I was a kid, but I didn't follow that through. But this was a way for like me to reconnect with that. So he knew the power of the metaphor early, and if it wasn't for, you know, if it wasn't for him, DiCaprio wouldn't have come on. You know, what happened was DiCaprio gave us money for Kickstarter, and that was his entree point. You know,
yeah,
and it was ironic because like once DiCaprio gave us money for the Kickstarter. The story got picked up in all the trades and all the press. And
oh, yeah.
It was DiCaprio saves lonely whale.
Of course. Like,
what do I? What, I'm doing all the work.
You need to go on the expedition. We did it.
I just think it's hilarious, the idea of Leo DiCaprio like logging on to Kickstarter and being like, hey, you know what?
Yeah.
I got an extra all 15 right. bucks in my pocket that's burning my hole in there.
Was that the 50,000, right? Was when he did the Kickstarter? Yeah.
And again, that was, you know, he's been, you know, we kind of make fun of these, some of the celebrities in terms of what they're doing. But like, I guarantee you seeing it from the inside, if you didn't have the power of these guys doing what they're doing, like we would be even further back than where we are in terms of the club. Like I say to people, like, we have to rely on Al Gore as our storyteller for climate change. Like we are in trouble.
Okay? Yeah.
We are in serious trouble.
No kidding.
DiCaprio, bring me everybody. You know, because we need to make this a better story so that people will care, so that people will actually, you know, wake up and start doing shit.
Yeah.
There is some actual horror movie aspects to this movie. Especially when it talks about the shipping lanes, which is something I've never thought about in my life. When it brought that up and why it's so dangerous to whales and like the questions people have, like how in the world do whales not know a ship's coming? These type of things like that. How brutal was that to have to cover that in your story?
It's tough stuff. And then it's like, first, I don't know why, but it's like the reality, like ships, they have this curve when they're cutting through the water and then a bulb, right? So it's like, so ship strikes are a big thing. And John Columbia was just talking to me about ship strikes. There's a couple of high profile ship strikes. Navy like destroyer went into like, I forget it was San Diego or San Francisco or something, and had a whale and a baby whale both on the front bow when they pulled in, and they don't even know it until like they kind of get in, and everybody's like, you know, you have two dead whales on the front. And so it's tough. Why don't whales, because, you know, they can't turn quickly enough or something like that, or they're like so into the feeding. I mean, you know, we've all been in situations where we step off the curb and just for whatever reason, you know, don't hear the zooming cars. You know, I think it's the fact that there's so much noise all around, you can't really kind of say, oh, directionally it's coming from there. So it's tough, but, you know, and it's happening more and more. So now we're finding out there's things you can do. Basically, first of all, those ships are so – you think whales are huge. These ships are huge. Like, they are so big, like, your mind is blown. Like, you can't even be like, I don't even know how big that is, even in my eyes to what I'm seeing. You know what I'm saying? You know, at a certain point, like, the Empire State Building is just so big, like, you can't kind of comprehend until, like, it falls over in a – Independence Day world, you know,
right?
And the ships are like that too. Like, you just can't even comprehend how big they are. And the, except when you put one, when you put like a 100-foot gray whale on its front bow that's just been impaled. So, and so it's they're so big. 90% of everything we get is from the ocean, and so
that was shocking. By the way, I should know that, but I did not know that. I didn't realize to what extent it was.
Well, you just don't think, but it's like, yeah, everything travels. And so I think ocean shipping is going to become a huge story as the ships get bigger, and they are only getting bigger. And so that's going to become a pretty big story. Ocean noise pollution. I had no idea about ocean noise pollution. No idea. But it's like suddenly when somebody put it in the context, like, I know when my dog barks or when there's a car alarm going off in New York City, like, I will freak out. Like, literally, I will get violent and I will open up the window and I will consider throwing a huge rock out the window to smash the, and I don't care. Like, okay, come arrest me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you know, like, I will take extreme measures when it comes to noise. And so imagine if that's like for a whale, like 24/7. Oh God, they must be going crazy.
Yeah. That was something I had read about a sort of an after effect of 9/11, of all things.
Yeah.
The fact that there were no planes flying overhead and whale calls were different during that point because there was no airplane. Even airplane noise is a thing for the ocean.
It was the quietest the oceans have ever been in the past, you know, I guess, you know, however many years was on 9/11.
Yeah.
Everything stopped.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
We're getting close to our 30 minutes here. Barrett, what anything else you would like
to do? Yes, I have two questions. Okay. It always intrigues me about the choice a documentarian makes on how to interview their subjects or how to interview the people. Some just point and shoot, right? And it's just that. What the decision that you made is to actually ask the questions off camera.
Mm-hmm.
How did you make that decision? And is that kind of your style? And if so, why do you prefer that rather than just letting the subject speak for themselves? Not that that you don't also have that, but there are times where you interact with the person.
You know, because I think this film specifically is about listening and connection. And I think that there's really something to be gained to hear somebody phrase a question and then somebody ask that question, answer that question. I think there's something, there's a little bit you can gain. You know, there's something to be gained from any interaction, but I think when I included it is because I thought that there was something there.
Do you prefer that though? I mean, if you're watching a documentary or in the process itself, overall, do you think that's a more efficient way to get the information that you were trying to get?
I mean, that's a good question. Like, we do it in news, right? In news, we see the back and forth, but not really in documentary that much. But I always believe that there's interesting information you can glean as to how they answer your specific question.
Right, right.
So I don't know. You know, sometimes it's apropos, sometimes it's not. I like it to make a point.
Great.
Like, I use it in true crime more than I do in this. Like, do you believe he's guilty? Mm,
yeah.
You know, and that... you know, look at the tension that's there in that one question. You want that to you want the time in the response, how long it takes them to answer. You want them to change their body posture. Like,
I see. So it's not only informative, it's cinematic. As well. I see.
You know, I think there's a lot of reasons. I mean, again, that's a true crime version, but I think, you know, to the right audience, you could play detective.
I got you.
Yeah. And get something from that.
Okay. Yeah. I have one more question. You've got all these hardcore scientists. I mean, best in the world. I mean, you're hearing from, you know, audiologists and professors and stuff like that. And then God bless you. You throw in Kate Micucci. because I love Garfunkel and Oates. I love her. How did that come about? Did you have like a relationship with her at some point?
No idea. I didn't even know who she was, to be honest with
really?
You.
Really?
I didn't even know at all who she was. All I heard was this woman did a song about the whale. I thought it was kind of funny and cute, you know, and I think we need that like 14-year-old girl perspective against like the scientist perspective.
Right. No, it's perfect. And, it's perfect.
Like, you're the perfect person for that. Like you're like the perfect like I'm a hipster and this is my like, you know, my version of that, you know. And I didn't even know who she was. I found out she was like hugely popular, but it's so interesting that she like embodies that idea.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No, she gets it. I mean, she's got the same perspective as a lot of these scientists, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have time, but can you talk a little bit about the station agent at all? Because sure. I feel like this is one of these movies that people still haven't really glommed onto. It's one of the most underrated. It's one of the most underrated movies, in my opinion. Now, maybe it is bigger elsewhere in other places, but it came out in 2003, and it's an early Peter Dinklage. Although unless you haven't seen Living in Oblivion at this point,
right?
But the station agent is great. What was your experience like on that movie?
Magical.
Yeah,
because it was like, you know, it's like being in you know, getting everybody's rookie year. You know, like watching everybody in their
Bobby
rookie.
Cannavale is relatively young at this point.
Of course, it's not their rookie year. You know what I'm saying? But it's like it was one of those. There's a thing, having produced a lot of indie films, like for some reason, you know, you get certain films together and there's a magic, and you can see it. You've been there. It's like with a baseball team, and it's like with on a movie set, and that was that. Mm-hmm. And Tom McCarthy, who won. Best Picture for, you know, Spotlight.
Yeah, right.
And there was a crazy synergy between these people. Bobby and Peter and Patricia, even the cast of characters was so
good.
And Tom, and you were like, okay, that's some magic what we're watching there right now. And it's just a beautiful experience. It was early in the indie film kind of scene, you know, where like, there was a certain, you know, Cinderella story about the whole thing, and that was it, and funny. I mean,
yeah,
those guys are good. Really good.
Thank you so much for talking to us today. Thank you for coming out and talking to us.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
The movie is The Loneliest Whale, The Search for 52. It's in theaters July 9th and digital July 16th. That's going to do it for this interview. It's Chris Atkinson and Barrett Sher. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.